Fall has arrived at JCPenney, the perfect time to refresh your home. From now until Sunday, get up to 50% off select comforter sets, furniture, and the most comfortable mattresses from top brands like Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, and more. And save 50 to 60% on select sheet sets, plus an extra 15% with your coupon on select home items. Hurry, end soon. That's getting your pennies worth. JCPenney. Coupon valid 9/28 to 10/9 on select home items, furniture, and mattresses. Prices valid 9/28 to 10/1. Selections vary by store while supplies last. Fittings on regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. Some exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.
Comfort can be a thorn in the side of revelation.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. We are back with another of the season preview podcasts. You can check out all of the, I think, 20 plus that we've done so far. Also had Shooting Guard Tears podcast the other day, which you can check out. We're going to hopefully wrap up the team preview podcasts this week. And to start this week off, I'm going to be looking at the Dallas Mavericks. And to talk all things Dallas, I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Mavericks podcast, and that is Nick Angstadt. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing well, Josh. Thanks for having me on.
It's good. Good to have you on to chat about the Mavericks, a team that didn't have many, I guess, big moves in the offseason, but they are still a really interesting team for us to talk about, because while not many things happen necessarily, the dynamics of things could shift this season. The way we start off doing these shows, Nick, we look at the players who were added to the team. And with Dallas, the free agency and trade stuff, like, there wasn't much that actually went down. Josh McRoberts came across from the Heat in exchange for AJ Hammonds. He hasn't been healthy for about the last three seasons, and I don't think we expect too much to change this year, Nick. I don't think we see him as a regular part of the rotation, do we?
Yeah, I'm interested to see. I'm going to be in the locker room looking at Josh McRoberts as a Maverick with Mavericks logos all over him, like on his shorts, on his jersey, and I'm going to have to ask him questions about the Mavericks, having no intention of him being like an actual Mavericks player. It's going to be really weird.
He's going to be sitting around. He's going to be doing his thing, what he's been doing for the last 3 years, basically just collecting contract money while participating.
Keeping them checks.
Exactly. Participating in some of the practices. That's about all he's been doing. The other guy I think is relatively interesting that came across is Maxi Kleber, who is a German power forward from the same hometown as Dirk Nowitzki. Probably not going to be an every night rotation player, but I do like this guy's upside as a potential triple one guy, a player who averages a steal, a block, and a three per game. If he was to get regular minutes, he was an okay shooter overseas. He's a pretty good rebounder. What do you see for Kleber coming across in his rookie season in the NBA?
Yeah, I think the hope for Kleber is that he just makes the team. I mean, that's kind of where we are with him right now. There's just a lot of returning players, and there's not a ton of roster spots open and available. We still have a two-way contract open. I think one of these guys that we're going to talk about is going to make that, Jonathan Motley being the one that's already signed for them. So he could end up being a two-way player if he decides to go that route. And then I don't know about making the full roster, so that's kind of where we are with him.
So you mentioned Jonathan Motley's on that two-way. So who else do you think can make this roster? We've got PJ Dozier, who has signed. Jeff Withey came across from the Jazz. John Clavell is here. Brandon Ashley, Malik Waynes as well. Who ends up making the roster? Your pick out of those guys?
Yeah, they're sort of maxed out a little bit with their roster. And I think that if one of these guys, if I had to pick one of these guys, I mean, I think Withey's going to make it. I think signing him to that deal, I'm pretty sure is guaranteeing them a spot. However, the Mavericks have not been shy about even having guys that are on these like multi-million-dollar guaranteed contract, non-guaranteed or guaranteed contracts, and then just cutting them because they think another player is better. This happened several times in the past. So I think Withey will make it. Me and Isaac Harris on our Locked On Mavericks have this bet on whether we think either PJ Dozier or Gian Clavell is going to make the team, or be still part of the team, whether on the Legends or something, like either any one of those tiers. If he's on the team, if he's on a two-way, or if he's on the Texas Legends, one of us will win something and we'll get bragging rights. But I have John and he has PJ Dozier. I think I might lose that one, but
yeah, I think I'd take Dozier as well. But It could clearly go either way with that. But these guys aren't going to have too much of an impact. If Withy makes a roster, he's going to be the third string, fourth string center probably on this team. So there's not a lot to talk about there. And even the guys that left, there's not too much. AJ Hammonds went to the Heat, as I mentioned, in that trade. DeAndre Liggins signed with the Clippers, and Nicholas Brasino was waived, and he was claimed by the Atlanta Hawks. But the big acquisition, the big thing that's going to make everything more exciting for Mavericks fans this season, hopefully, is the acquisition of Dennis Smith Jr. in the draft with the 9th pick. An absolute steal, in my opinion. I would have taken Smith personally at pick number 3. I was pretty vocal about that all through the pre-draft process. He fell to the Mavericks, and it is a perfect situation for the Mavericks to have him. I think it's a great situation for Smith as well. Just how excited are you about getting Smith, or are you one of the, I guess, few people who was a little bit put off by, you know, some of the reports of attitude issues in his time at NC State?
No, I mean, we did some draft profiles of all the guys we thought would possibly be in the range of where the Mavericks are drafting. And before the draft, we were like, man, this guy would be great. We just don't think he's going to fall. You know, we don't think he's going to fall to the Mavericks. And then now that he's on the team, and then we had some holdups with him, you know, the attitude situation, the, you know, is he going to show up every single game? Is he going to give maximum effort? So those we had some questions about. But then as soon as he got on the roster, almost as soon as he was drafted, it seemed like the whole fan base, everybody that had questions about him, just took a complete 180 and just said, this guy is the guy. He is our, you know, he could be the best player in the draft and blah, blah, blah. They went and ran with that. And then now all of a sudden we're seeing these, you know, pieces and articles about Dennis Smith Jr. is going to make this player better, and he's going to make this player better, make it easier for this. And so, man, like, that is, it just seems like the biggest acquisition, like, in their history, maybe, just because of how much people are talking about it. And I think that that's just a testament to how exciting of a player he is and how exciting it is to have a point guard like this. And the Mavericks have never had a guy, you know, a point guard that's this athletic and is this exciting.
The on draft night, Rookie of the Year odds came out immediately, and he was about 16-1. So I jumped on, I smashed that. I jumped on that really quickly. I think he's into about $4.50 at the moment, as people realize, you know what, this bloke might be able to do a bit more than that. In Summer League, 17 points, 4 assists in under 26 minutes, over 2 steals per game, shot 35% from 3. But people are always going to bring up this point, and I hear it all the time when I talk about him. Rick Carlisle hates rookies. He's going to lean on his vets. He's not going to give him the minutes. They're going to butt heads. And my argument to that is Rick Carlisle started a undrafted rookie for the second half of last season. So it's not like he has this steady veteran presence that he's going to play in there in Yogi Ferrell and play. Yeah, JJ Barea is still around, but we know what JJ Barea's limitations are. He can't be a starting point guard who's going to be running out for 30 minutes. I am under no illusion that it's going to be Smith that's playing these minutes, and I think I've got him conservatively projected at about 30 minutes, but he could go past that. Do you have any concerns about Carlisle you're not giving him this job straight away, or running with a Seth Curry at point guard? Like, or is it just bang, this is it, Smith starting from day one and let's go?
I did, even before the draft, I had reservations saying, you know, if we get any of these guys, like, let's say, you know, like Dennis Smith Jr. falls to us, or let's say we end up picking Frank Ntilikina, I had reserves saying, man, like Carlisle does have this thing where he will pull guys really quick. Yeah. And so I'm saying, even if they did decide to start him right away, but this was all before the draft, that he might pull him right away and, you know, he will get less minutes that way. But right. And one of the things that the first things that I asked Rick Carlisle when I came in contact with him is, like, you have this stigma. Fans say that you have this stigma of, you know, hating rookies and not, you know, playing rookies. Can you speak to that? And he just said, well, they just have to prove something to me. And so I think Dennis Smith Jr. is definitely going to have to prove it. But as soon as they drafted him, Rick Carlisle comes up on the podium draft night. We're at the American Airlines Center. He says, all of us, he's projected as the starter, now, which is a weird thing for a coach to say, because he gets to make that decision. You know, say, like, he's projected as the starter. Like, yeah, you're making that decision. What do you think at this point? You know, like, you would be the one to answer that. We're going to be the ones asking you. So he is going to be the starter right away, and I think they're just going to give him as many minutes as, you know, as they can give him. And he might get pulled every once in a while, but I think he's going to learn really quick.
That, like, before the draft or during the draft night, there was all these talk that the Mavericks were looking at Drew Holiday, and then they drafted Dennis Smith, and that was, like, shot down immediately. Like, we are not looking at a point guard in free agency anymore. Like, we are going with Smith. That will happen. Look, he will get pulled in some games, but he'll also play 36 minutes in some games. They'll run him out there. Yeah, he is a sensational pick in drafts. He's going at 109 in Yahoo and 101 in ESPN. And you take him at 90, I don't think there's any problem with that. He's got clear upside to go into the top 50 if everything works well for him. I've been on record saying he's the clear number 3 guy in dynasty leagues behind Ball and Fulton. If you took him at 2 or 1, I wouldn't care, because I think these guys, you know, can be relatively interchangeable. He's going to He gets his steals. He gets his assists. He's a solid rebounder. He will score. He's going to do a whole bunch for this team. And you know, he is a guy who is still getting undervalued in fantasy leagues at the moment because people are having that Carlisle concern. And but as I said, it's not like Darren Williams is still here. Like if he was still there, you'd go, they're probably going to ease. Yeah. They're going to ease Smith in. They'll play him 24 a night. But it's not. It's an undrafted rookie who's honestly, no offense to Yogi Ferrell, but he's not cut out to be a starting point guard. And why don't you put the guy in who is going to be your starting point guard of the future? So I don't have too much concern with Dennis Smith in that sort of situation. I think his upside is absolutely immense. Now, Nick, last season there were some injuries with this team. Dirk Nowitzki suffered Achilles problems, and that limited him throughout the season. In fact, he played just 54 games last season and only 26 minutes a game. We have to assume that the Achilles is okay now, so we're going to be preparing for a full-ish season of Dirk. They will still be resting at the age of 39 or 40, is he now?
Yeah, 39.
He's going to be missing some games, but I think that he will play more minutes this season in something that's a little bit bucking a trend of older players whose minutes decrease, because I think a lot of his minutes would decrease last season because of, you know, returning from injury. I think he gets back to maybe 27 minutes and I guess reminds people that he's still pretty good.
Yeah, definitely still pretty good. And people have been reminding me that all weekend because we've been doing these player rankings, just ranking how good we think players are going to be next year, not on fantasy stats or anything like that. But I put Dirk really low on the starting power forward and everybody's been getting at me all weekend. So I definitely know that Dirk is still really good. I think his minutes are going to decrease. I think that they're not necessarily going to reserve him, but just try to preserve him in a way. He's getting older. He's not able to do as much. He's going to try to play as much as he can, but he knows his limitations at this point. I think 27 minutes might be a little much. If I was the coach, I don't think I would play him that much, but I would err on the side of caution in that point. But yeah, any kind of injury like that, the Achilles injury. I mean, there's a point last season I remember vividly that there was a, you know, Dirk, the Mavs PR staff called a press conference for Dirk, and we were like, oh man, this was in December, I think, and the Achilles injury was lingering, and he wasn't coming back, and he was supposed to come back in 2 weeks, and then he didn't, and then they called this press conference, and we were like, oh my gosh, is he gonna retire? You know? Yep. And it didn't happen. He just wanted to give us an update and speak to the media. He hadn't in a little while. And then towards the end of the year, people, you know, Mark Stein had an interview with him and they were talking about, well, you could play, you know, two more years, three more years. You know, like it's crazy how the turnaround of Dirk. But I think he'll play a little less this year.
He played in the last 27 games of the year. He played 27 minutes a game. So that's, you know, sort of what I'm basing it on as he came back from that Achilles. Look, he could definitely go to 26, but he's not going too much lower than that. But it does bring up the interesting question of what the Mavericks do in this front court. Because we saw it last season, even after the acquisition of Nerlens Noel, that the Mavericks would run Dirk at center. They'd play Harrison Barnes at the four, and they'd run with, you know, Seth Curry, Wes Matthews at the two and the three. If you had to guess right now, do you think that we're getting Noel starting next to Dirk, or are we playing Barnes? Because Barnes' best position is at the four, and Dirk's best position is probably at the four as well. So they're trying to balance where they run that. How does that front court trio, especially of Barnes, Noel, and Dirk, you know, work together? Who's the, the odd man out at this point? Is it a guy like Curry or Matthews that moves from the wing, or is it Noel who starts off as the bench guy?
I think if you're just looking at starts, I think that Curry ends up being the odd man out. But as far as minutes, I think Dirk's going to, you know, obviously have the lowest amount of minutes on that group. I think they'll start Dirk and Noel together. But, you know, said several times last season that just because you don't start doesn't mean you're not going to be able to play 30 minutes or so a game. So Noel's definitely going to get his time. I mean, we'll talk about him in a minute. But, yeah, I think Curry, if you're just looking at starts, is going to be the odd man out there.
So, well, let's talk about Noel now. He had his injury issues last season. He came across to Dallas. He didn't play huge amounts of minutes in Dallas. So what are you envisaging him from this season? Because obviously he signed that qualifying offer. There's friction there, I guess, between him and the front office. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. Again, the Mavs went away from him in that period when he was acquired by the team and started Dirk. People said, oh yeah, he's going to be contract year Noel, he's going to be playing big. But I put up the opposite side of it and go, well, what if the Mavericks just go, well, this guy just didn't accept our deal. We're not going to have any control over him. What if they just say, well, why don't we just play that smaller lineup and have Dirk at center and limit what Noel can do rather than, you know, running him out there for big minutes for a guy that we don't feel all that confident is going to be around next season.
Yeah, that is a really big question. And I'd be okay if I never had to talk about Nerlens' contract ever again, but it looks like I'm going to have to do it all season long. So, oh, no, all season long, he's a free agent. Everybody's going to be asking about it. But Noel, I think he's going to be a starter. I think the contract year thing is – it's definitely going to be a motivator. And if it's a motivator for him, and he learned a little last year what it takes to play in play for Carlisle, because as soon as he got here, he showed up late for a plane ride, and everybody made this huge deal about it here. And then, you know, he heard about all that stuff. And so it just – to me, I think he definitely learned from last year that, you know, the – 22 games that he played with them. He only averaged 22 minutes a game, which looking back, it seemed like he would have averaged more than that. I think that'll go up this year. But yeah, I think if he has any kind of attitude issues or any kind of, you know, he's not playing within the offense or not playing, you know, not getting in his spots on defense correctly, I think Carlisle could pull him really quick because of this whole contract situation. But he was one of the guys, during his time with the Mavericks, those 22 games, he averaged a steal and a block per game. And he's done that before in his career, but the only 10 guys to do that last year were Giannis, Durant, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Andre Drummond, Gorgui Dieng, James Johnson, Andre Roberson, and Robert Covington. And I definitely could see him, you know, fitting into that group with those guys. And the only three guys to get a double-double and do that were Davis, DeMarcus, and Drummond. And that's what Noel did with his time for the Mavericks. So I can see that. I think he could be – I mean, he's going to be a great fantasy player. But for the Mavericks, as a player – it'll be interesting to see how Carlisle approaches this.
Because
he could knock the contract stuff into account, or he could. We'll see.
Forget one steal and one block per game. Like, Noel is one of two guys in the NBA, I think, that can average two steals and two blocks per game. And the other one of those is Giannis. Like, he's flirted with that before, and that makes him such an elite fantasy guy. Like, I don't think he's going to get there, but that's, you know, if he could go out there and play 29 minutes a game, he could average 12 and 10 with 1.8 steals, 1.8 blocks, and then you're talking about a top 30 fantasy guy. So to me, he's getting picked at 109 on ESPN, ludicrous, 81 on Yahoo, stupid. He just needs to be picked higher than that. I wouldn't be necessarily going too much higher, but in the 70s is a great spot for a guy that's going to get that steal, block, field goal percentage, rebound combo. And then at the level I've got him projected, there's way more upside that if he just comes in and does what he can do based on his potential, then he's going to put up huge, huge numbers, or he's got that opportunity to. So I do really like Noel. I've liked him for a long time. And that ability to get those steals and blocks, like literally nobody else apart from Giannis can do, is what sets him apart and gives him significant fantasy value. Now, at least we know he's going to be on the team. There is still that concern about how the minutes go, but you give him 25 minutes, he's a top 70 player, so he doesn't need huge minutes, and anything on top of that is a massive bonus. So for him to achieve that ranking where ESPN's got him at 109, he'd need to play like 19 minutes a game. That's just not happening. So it is it's as no-brainer as it can possibly get that is total bargain value at that spot, and you should be looking to exploit that as much as possible. Any reports on his health? Because obviously he missed the start of last season with knee issues. Is he full ready to go for training camp?
Yeah, he seems full ready to go to me. I mean, seeing him in the locker room every once in a while, he has so much ice on his knees. He's just, you know, that guy could be one, you know, collision away from just being out for the season. Which I think a lot of guys are at some point, but just his knees and the way that he's built still. I mean, that was the biggest thing coming into the league for him, was that he needed to add some size, and he has done that a little bit. But, you know, I think that's still something I think that might scare people away.
What do we make of Dorian Finney-Smith this season? Surprisingly, he played 81 games and 20 minutes per game, started a bunch of those last season. But to me, it feels like with Noel there for the full season, and that you're potentially pushing Dirk to the four, Barnes to the three, and then you obviously those wing minutes then become Wes Matthews and Seth Curry's more, that Finney-Smith's going to find it harder to achieve the level of production. Not that he produced much, he averaged 4 points a game last year in his 20 minutes, but just in terms of getting that playing time, is he still a regular every night member of the rotation, or do you think that he could potentially fall out of it with Devin Harris also pushing for minutes in that area?
Yeah, he's the only real backup three on this team. If you look at Barnes as like the real three, I guess, and then Dorian Finney-Smith, he's like the only one. You know, they got rid of Nico Brasino, and Justin Anderson went in that trade, and so he's the only really one left. Wes Matthews obviously going to play a lot of minutes at three, but he's also going to probably play some four at some point. He did that a lot last year, but him and Barnes are pretty interchangeable going back and forth. The thing with him is really going to be his jump shot. I mean, we were bullish on it after the season, saying, you know, that's one thing he really has to do. His defense is really, really good, and that doesn't really translate to numbers as much, but his, you know, his 3-point shot really needs to improve. And then this summer, you know, before training camp, before summer league, he would talk about, you know, oh, I changed my shot and, you know, I did this and did adjustments, and he went out and shot like 5 for 35 in the summer league.
Wow.
And so just not good. And he shot poorly last summer league as well, and he still made the team and ended up, you know, playing 81 games. So I don't think that means that he's not going to be able to shoot at all in the NBA next season, but that's just one thing we're really going to be watching now. Now, I really love Dorian Finney-Smith. I like him as a person, as a player. So I think that he'll be able to figure it out, but I still think that he'll get around that 20 minutes per game that he got last season.
He's not in any shape or form any sort of fantasy guy, as I mentioned. He just doesn't do anything.
No.
He was ranked outside, I think, the top 300 last year. Yeah, top three. He played 20 minutes a game and ranked outside the top 300. So he's not having any impact in any sort of fantasy league. But guys who will be Seth Curry and Wes Matthews. And we mentioned earlier, you know, who could potentially be getting that starting shooting guard job. I thought Curry outplayed Matthews at times last year, but Matthews' role seemed to change as the second half of the season went on. And in that last portion of the season, he became this facilitator, a guy that in the previous season averaged 1.9 assists per game. After the All-Star break, he averaged 4 assists per game. So, you know, what was that? What did you make of that change of role? Was it the fact that, you know, Williams was gone and Ferrell was now the point guard, so some of the more experienced guys were handling the ball more like Matthews and Curry? Or is it something that we think of as a potential permanent change in his role on this team?
Yeah, we've seen his role change almost week to week, just seeing like the things that he has to do. And when Yogi Ferrell came in, and the reason Yogi Ferrell actually got to start was, and, you know, people always say, like we mentioned it at the top of this show, that Carlisle has a thing against rookies. Well, Yogi Ferrell was this undrafted rookie that came in and started right away because he came in on a Saturday. They had practice. Everybody was injured, and Carlisle came up to him and said, "You're starting tomorrow against the Spurs." And so he just like came out of nowhere. And so they just didn't have any playmakers. They didn't have any point guards. And Wes Matthews had to do a lot of ball handling the last couple of years. And so we've seen him. I noted that his driving statistics also were, he had 3.5 drives a game last season, which is the same that Seth Curry had, but he only scored on 52% of those, 1.9 points per, you know, like from drives during the season. So we're seeing him drive more. Like you said, we're seeing him facilitate more. And I think that both of those areas in his game are going to be dialed back with Dennis Smith Jr. and him playing a lot of minutes together. So I think he'll go back to that 3-and-D kind of guy that we expect from him. You know, his 3-point percentage hopefully going up. The, you know, attempts, he attempted about 6 per game, only made 2.5. And so I expect that to go up definitely. And then for Seth, he'll be the sixth man. I think he'll be the secondary ball handler coming off the bench. And he had the same amount of drives as Wes Matthews, but scored on 58% of them, or scored on 85% of them. Excuse me, that was, I mean, a crazy number, and shot 58% on drives. So I think that with him, I think you're definitely going to get the more offensive production, and with Wes, you'll get the defensive production. Maybe not in the stats category, but for us, you know, following him as a player, I think defensively he's still got it.
People. You know, we talk about, back to Wes Matthews, talk about Achilles injuries, and I harp on about it all the time, and, you know, how hard it is to come back. And Wes Matthews came back, you know, really quickly and played the same amount of minutes. But since he returned from his Achilles injury, his field goal percentage has gone from 45% and 45% down to 39% and then 39% in those last two seasons.
Yeah.
And this is what happens with these Achilles injuries. Yeah, he came back. He made a miraculous recovery. He was back really soon. He played big minutes. He wasn't good in them. He was okay, but he wasn't the same player that he was, and he could not get his shot to form. We're 2 years removed from that now, and nothing changed. And over the second half of last season, we saw his minutes decrease as well. He played 34 minutes a game at the start of the year, post-All-Star, 31 a game, 9 points per game, only 1.6 threes, hit just 31% of his threes. And I think, and I've got him projected at 3 less minutes per game this season just because of the increased role of Noel pushing everyone down that spot and the play of Curry. Do you think that there is a chance that Seth Curry plays more minutes per game than Wes Matthews this season?
I think there's potential for that. I don't know that it'll actually happen because of Wes's ability to play 3 and the way that they wanted to play him there. There's, if you move Wes down to 2, then, and if you like Harrison Barnes at 4, then who are you going to play at 3? I mean, that's kind of the point. Eventually, you just have to throw wing bodies out there. And Wes is a guy that can guard multiple positions, and that's something that Carlisle really values. And I could see there being a scenario where Curry ends up playing more. But with Dennis Smith Jr. now, you know, being the point guard, it's hard to see. And there's kind of a logjam there at the guard position. You have, you know, Wes will play some minutes at two. You have the three point guards with JJ and Yogi Ferrell and Dennis. And so I don't see Seth Curry getting a ton of minutes at point guard. So he's stuck there at the two, and then he's sharing that with Wes, and then a little bit with Devin Harris as well. So I could see that, but Seth had an incredible run during that season. He had a 2-week stretch, I think, where he was averaging 20 points a game. I mean, he was looking like his brother. And yep. there was a point where he averaged, like, his 3-point percentage was better than Steph's. I don't know if it ended the season like that, but with Wes's second half production, some of that, and obviously the percentages aren't as much, but some of that was because the team was, you know, Cuban came out and admitted that they were tanking, and so they were playing guys like that less, and they were, you know, sitting them and things like that. We'll see. You know, some of these other guys had an increase in minutes per game, you know, because of the fact that, you know, they were tanking at the end of the year, and so they were playing younger guys more, and they were playing these, you know, veteran guys less.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate, and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
Curry, after the All-Star break, played 31 minutes, the same as Wes Matthews, and he was just barely outside the top 60 in fantasy rankings, averaging 15.5 points with 3 assists and 2.5 threes, but on an incredible 51, 45, and 93, which is, they're stupid numbers. Like, he was efficient for the whole, look, he was 48, 43, 85 for the season anyway, but somehow he took that up a notch. And well, I don't think that he gets back to that level this season just because we talked about the minutes crunch that's going to be going on in that backcourt. I still think that he is a valuable fantasy asset this year. He's being drafted at 125 on Yahoo. I would take him above that. I'll take him inside the top 100 if necessary. Whereas on the flip side, Wes Matthews is going at 111, and I don't think he's really got much chance of being a top 150 guy with the, you know, what I think is going to be a potentially smaller role, and the issue with his efficiency, which has just struggled over these last couple of seasons. So I'm definitely having Seth over Wes, even though I do have Matthews playing more minutes than Curry for this season.
And I'll say one thing about Seth is that he's also in a contract year, and he is in a huge contract year. It might not be bigger than Noel's. Noel's is going to be the one that we're talking about, but Seth has been on this 2-year, $6 million, you know,
ridiculous deal. Contract.
Crazy contract. People talked about it last year, and I said that it was one of the best contracts in the league, you know, by far, just seeing like the production you get out of some other guys. Maybe some rookie contract guys would beg to differ, but he has an incredible contract. This is probably his one big chance to get a real big payday, and so you're going to see a really motivated Seth Curry who thinks he's really good.
Well, he's good, and he was a bit misused at the start of the season, but he came on late. Wes Matthews has got a player option after this season, but I would assume that he would opt into that, but I guess we'll see how that works given the size of that contract he's on and the level of his play and his age. I would think that he would opt into that, but we'll see how that goes. Now, we move to the big men. Okay, we've got Noel, we've got Dirk there, but there is the battle, I guess, of the backup true centers where we've got Dwight Powell and Salah Mejri who offer different things to this team. I thought Powell showed a lot, especially defensively last season. He, and this is going to sound weird to people, but he is also a triple one fantasy threat, and he's really good with his efficiencies from the line, especially from a big man. Gets some steals, you know, blocks some shots, can hit some threes. But is he the guy that moves into that role as that primary backup behind Noel when they don't go small to Dirk? Or Mejri, a guy that seemed to be like a spot starter type of player, especially when Andrew Bogut went down. How do we see these two guys?
Yeah, I'm sorry to burst your bubble. I don't think Powell's going to get a ton of playing time on this team. We've been really down on Dwight Powell. He played about 83% of his minutes at center last season, and after Noel was added to the team, he had 5 DNP CDs where he wasn't injured. There was no, you know, issues or anything, and he just was sat. You know, that's, you know, in a 22 game stretch, basically he sat 5 times with, you know, and wasn't even, you know, active. And then he was active, but he didn't play. Also, his minutes, he was averaging 18 minutes before Noel came, and then he averaged 15 minutes after, and the team was tanking. You know, like, the team was tanking, the team was bad, the team was playing young players. This is a guy you'd think that, you know, they would want to play more or see what you have more, and he did get a couple starts in there, but, you know, this is a team that was bad, wanted to play young players, and Dwight Powell was on the outside looking in several times at the end of the last season. So I don't know if you're going to get any consistent production out of him, but I don't think you expected that anyway. His three-point shot is a big thing. I've seen him in practice. This is no joke. I've seen him in practice beat Dirk Nowitzki in a shooting contest where they're just outside. They're doing around the world. They're shooting threes, and you see him beat him. And I have a video of him, like Dwight Powell's face looks exactly like all of our faces would be, like just this shock and like almost horror looking back at Dirk being like, did I actually just beat you in this? And he does, you know, a couple times. I just don't know why it's not translating to the court, whether that's a confidence thing, whether that's just it, you know, getting reps on the court in live action games. I'm not sure what it is, but if that turns around, I mean, I think his minutes could definitely bump up. I just don't expect it to.
He does have that interesting fantasy game. So it's a situation to watch if say a Dirk went down or Noel went down. And those are things that are not, they're not totally unlikely to have either Noel or Nowitzki or both hurt at the same time. If that happened, I don't think many Dallas people would go, I can't believe the luck. Like, how could that possibly happen? Like, these are things that I think we've got a decent chance that maybe that does go down, and then Powell moves into that. Now, Mejri's a different guy, obviously. High field goal percentage, high shot blocking, high rebounding type of player, but he showed his value at certain times last season as well. But would you put him, you know, pretty firmly behind Powell at this point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, behind Powell probably. Salah Mejri is like a cartoon fire hydrant. Like most of the time they're just there like in the background, but then every once in a while, like a cartoon fire hydrant will be like gushing water out. And that happens in my apartment complex a lot, where just most of the time they're just there and they're just like in the background. And then every once in a while, it'll just like, poof, like just be spewing water out and just all this stuff. And you'll definitely notice it. He had a game last year. He was 15 points, 16 points, 17 rebounds. It was insane. It was the Salah Mejri game. And if anybody had them on like their, you know, their one-day fantasy site, whichever one you guys decide to use, like, man, that was a good night to have Salah Mejri if you hit that one right. He had five games of double-digit rebounds. He had two games last year of double-digit points. He had seven games of three-plus blocks. But he's still, you know, in the back. And then Jeff Withey potentially being on the team could, you know, go and challenge Mejri for those minutes as well. So if he doesn't come out and, you know, play better than he did last year, then we could see him losing time just like Dwight Powell did.
Well, let's get on to the player who's I guess paid the most on this team, the pencil, Harrison Barnes. He was extraordinary to start last season, like really, really good. But if we look at what happened to him over the course of the season, things did start to dip. The efficiency dropped off, his fantasy value dropped. He was the 81st ranked player over the course of the season, but the last 2 months outside the top 120. And with Dirk playing a full season, with Nerlens Noel potentially playing a full season for both those guys, with the addition of Dennis Smith, do you see Barnes, whose fantasy value is almost entirely predicated on his usage, do you see him being more like that second half guy who takes a few less shots? You know, post All-Star, he was at 2 field goal attempts less than his season average. With Smith around now, can you see his usage actually decreasing this year and not having to shoulder as large a burden as what he did last season?
Yeah, my hope for Harrison Barnes is that his, like you said, his usage decrease and that his efficiency increase. Now, that's probably the hope for every player in the league, but you know, he's still a really young guy. He's been around forever. He's been in a couple finals, and so we feel like he's just been around for a long time. And then even at North Carolina in high school, just, you know, he's one of these guys that just seems like he's been around forever. But he's only 24, turning 25, I think, this summer. I think he did. But he's in this rarefied air in the NBA where there's, you know, 36 players that averaged 19 points or more last season. He was 35th out of 36 in free throw attempts. The only one below him was Klay Thompson. He was 32nd out of 36 in 3-point attempts. The only, you know, players behind him in that were Giannis, Blake Griffin, Anthony Davis, and DeMar DeRozan. So I think both of those categories, I think, can improve for him. He was also the last on that list in assist percentage. So I think is hopefully going to take a turn. I think he knows that's one thing he really needs to work on. And then efficiency, and how you get more efficient in the NBA is you getting to the free throw line more, you know, probably taking some more threes. He shoots it at a fairly good clip. But yeah, I think his usage will go down hopefully a little bit this year. And he really was fatigued at the end of the season. He was carrying a really big load. He was playing the four almost every single night, starting at the four almost every single night, playing against guys. I mean, he guarded Blake Griffin at some points. I mean, guarding guys like Blake Griffin, that just takes a toll on you. And Anthony Davis, guys like that, I mean, that's just really tough. And being the number one guy on an NBA team was difficult. And I think he really learned that last year. And if Dirk was not on the team, he'd be the hardest worker on the team probably. And so I think he's going to take that, learn from it, and get better.
he was one of the – there was multiple players last season that saw significant dips in their free throw percentage, like Pau Gasol, Nikola Vucevic, Vic Oladipo. They like dropped like 9, 10% in their free throws. Barnes went the other way, and he took it up by 10%. He went from a 76% free throw shooter to an 86% free throw shooter. And if he gets that volume up, that significantly increases his fantasy value. But all those things that you said is why he's not a good fantasy player. He doesn't get assists. He doesn't get steals. Doesn't block shots. Doesn't get to the line. Doesn't hit threes. He scores, and that's fine. He's an average rebounder, but that's really all he does. And he was the 81st ranked player last season. And for some reason, the fine folks over at ESPN and Yahoo have him ranked as 64th on Yahoo and 72nd on ESPN. So they are expecting him to improve on what he did last season, even with the addition of Smith and a full season of Noel and Nowitzki. And I just can't see that happening. So when you go and look at your basketball monster, you've got the icons next to his name, and I've got bust candidate and overrated. It's not because I think he's a bad player. It's just that I think that at that position, there's no way, or not there's no way, but a lot of things are going to have to change from what we've seen from Harrison Barnes for him to actually return that level of value from the pick. Where I think it's more likely to actually decrease than go up, but they're banking in a 20-spot improvement in his fantasy vote, and I just don't see it. So while Barnes was a guy I had on lots of teams last year because after his poor finals and horrendous preseason, people were a little bit concerned, but you're able to grab him at 120, and it worked out well. But this year, we're talking about a significant increase, and I just don't see it. I see it pulling back just a little bit, similar to how we saw in the second half of last season, and that doesn't make sense at pick 64. So he's a guy that I think that I'll be steering clear of in that sort of a sense. Now, we've referenced Yogi Ferrell a few times. He had a few big games that people were really in love with him last season, and there were people telling me, man, this guy's going to be our point guard for the future. Look, yeah, Cuban signed him to a long-term deal. I go, look, no. Look, he's good. He had that massive game against Portland where he hit 9 threes because it was, I think, his second game maybe starting for the team, and the Portland guys literally had no idea. They didn't know what his game was, and they didn't bother getting out to chase him through on screens. They just sort of let him go and gave him space, and he buried them. But he's not that guy. He's not a future starter. He's not a elite prospect. He could be a solid backup. But there are people telling me that he's going to take the job off Smith, and he's going to play. They're going to play 28 minutes each, and I cannot see it. He was fine. He was serviceable. But I think we saw in that time last season that he's just not a starting point guard.
Now, what we think that he's going to end up being is the next J.J. Barea. I think he's going to be a really, really good backup point guard that can eventually play in these Carlisle two-guard lineups that he likes to play, these two point guards a lot. We saw that, and we just did a whole series on the 2011 NBA Finals where the last three games of those finals, he ended up starting Jason Kidd and J.J. Barea together, and they ended up winning all those games to win the finals. So you can go check out that if you want to hear more about us just rambling about the Mavs winning. But I think he'll be the backup point guard. I think he'll get a decent amount of playing time. He's also a really, really hard worker, and he comes in and he is very professional. And I think that his production will probably be down from what it was last season just because of Dennis Smith Jr. coming in. That's one player I don't think will benefit from him, but they're also going to be in competition. I think Yogi is going to come in and think that, he should be able to start as well and, compete against him every single day in practice. And hopefully that will motivate him. We saw them play together during summer league, and I think that'll happen probably 3 or 4 minutes a night or something like that. Randomly it'll happen and people will get excited about it, but I don't think it'll happen too much. But yeah, he'll still be the backup. He'll be getting the backup point guard minutes, and he should be an okay player, but I don't know if he's ever going to have one of those nights that he had in Portland again.
He is a guy, much like J.J. Barea, that if you're looking for assists, you can stream these guys in, because Barea especially, in 20 minutes, he can get 4, 5, 6 assists in limited playing time, and that's really helpful, and I talk about that all the time. Yeah, and Ferrell can do the same. He can get 3 or 4 assists. He could hit 2 or 3 threes in limited minutes. So they're guys that we know can come in limited playing time, especially if someone is down, if Matthews gets hurt, or if Curry is out, or if Smith is hurt. These guys will come in, and you'll use them, and they'll be effective in the short term. But if we're looking at everyone just being around, the role is just not going to be there for them, or either of those guys, to be playing big minutes. And I think that's what the team needs, is to develop your guys who are going to be stars. And that's where Smith currently sits. Now, a guy that I think could really easily fall out of that mix is Devin Harris, who we don't really consider him a point guard anymore. He's more of a two. But in terms of finding minutes for him, I don't think it's that easy to find him at every, that's even if he gets that toe healthy, which he claims that it is. But I don't see him being able to be in the rotation every single night.
Yeah, that's gonna be tough for him. We just talked about, it's gonna be hard finding Steph Curry's, point guard minutes. Exactly. And so for Devin Harris, it's going to be the spot minutes, and he'll what did he average last year? 16 minutes a night. That's definitely gonna go down probably, unless we see something where, you know, this is not the obvious, like this is not the best timeline. Like, this is the darkest timeline for this team. But if, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. does end up being not as good as everybody thinks he's going to be, then we could see Devin Harris's minutes increase in that sense. But I just don't see that happening. So, yeah, he's a really good veteran on the team. And I had been very bullish on the fact that, you know, veterans on a team are important and they're necessary, especially on a team with young point guards. And so I think he's necessary on this team. But for fantasy's sake, there's no way.
Am I correct in saying that his contract is non-guaranteed?
Yes.
So there is a timeline that he is a guy, if they like Kleber, if they like Doge, if they like Clavel, there is a chance that Harrison is $4.5 million is cut this season.
Yeah, I think his non-guaranteed date's in January. I think it's early January. So it could even be during the season if they have a trade or something that they want to pull off, that he could end up not being on the team by the end of the year. I don't think that'll happen because they really like him. But yeah, I don't think that'll could happen. But I don't think it will.
Who is your breakout candidate on this team? You can define that however you want.
Oh, I want it to be Dennis Smith Jr. Can we just have him have that like the Stevie franchise rookie year? He's averaging like 18 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. You know, I just want that. That's what I want really bad. If I had to pick a real one, it would probably be Nerlens Noel, actually, just coming back. And, you know, he's on a contract year. Like we talked about his, you know, the heights for him, like the variance for him being a fantasy player is really high. I mean, in rarefied air that nobody else can probably hit, because he can do things on the court that no one else can really.
I've got, I don't have any of these players projected as any Mavericks players as top 50 guys, but Smith and Noel have got clear top 50 upside on this team. And if they both ended up as top 40 guys this year, it would not be a surprise in any sense. And I think they're guys that you should be heavily targeting in drafts. And normally I'm one to say stay away from rookies, but the spot that Smith is going at, it's all upside at that spot. Like, I don't think you can lose by taking a bit of pick 100. And you could really, really, you know, cash in and take home some big value by getting him there. And same as Noel at pick 109. Like, it is just an absolute no-brainer that you take him at that spot. There is no argument with that. The other guys that I like as value players are like Seth Curry at that 125 spot. I think that's solid. And I've already talked about the guys who I think are busts. I think Matthews at 111 is too high, and Barnes at 64 is crazy to me. Again, expecting a significant improvement in what he did last season. Feels like it's going to be tough, just given the way that this team has shaken out and the way that he did sort of drop off a little bit with that extra pressure at the end of last season. So, you know, I think that those guys could struggle to make that or return that level of investment that you'd have to make in your fantasy drafts. Now, Nick, the way we wrap up these shows is to go to the Vegas over-under and let the hosts of the Locked On team shows with their completely non-rose-colored glasses give an over-under prediction. Vegas has the Mavs at 35.5. Where are you at with that?
Man, this is it. It's the perfect spot. Like, Bill Simmons on his podcast calls this the Vegas zone, where it just almost seems perfect. Like, I would have a hard time betting over, hard time betting under. But I think they'll probably end up over, I think, because this team was really good after the All-Star break. Then they end up tanking, so the record doesn't show that. But there was like stretches where they were like a 500 team, which, you know, is 41 wins, and so that would be above that. And so I think that they can do that if they're healthy. And I always do the projections as if everybody's going to be healthy, but health in this team is just going to be really big. Also, the West is just a slaughterhouse, man. All these teams, but they're also teams with high variance. We could see a team like Utah. We don't know how good they're going to be without Gordon Hayward. Who's going to score on that team? So we could see a couple of these teams fall out and not be as good as we expect them to be, and the Mavericks slide in there. But I would have to go over, just a slight over.
I would actually take the over on this one as well. I think 37 sounds, you know, closer to being right, when I could see them getting to 39 or 40, but I think 35 seems it's a little bit low. I haven't gone through and done all my over-unders in terms of, you know, projecting out to make sure there's the correct number of wins and losses in the NBA or anything like that. But just by looking at it, I think it's probably a soft over I would take on that. Now, Nick, before we let you go, you can throw out any plugs to what you've thrown a few into the show already, which is fantastic. But anything else you've got happening on Locked On Mavs, your Twitter account, anything else you want to promote while you're on here?
Yeah, you can go to mavsmoneyball.com and check out all the stuff going on there. Obviously, Locked On Mavs you can follow. You can Follow the Twitter handle at Locked On Mavs. We'll tweet all the shows out. You can follow me at Nick Van Exit. So thanks so much for having me, Josh.
Not a problem, Nick. Go and follow Nick. Go and subscribe to the Locked On Mavericks podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and our podcasts are now on Spotify as well. And of course, subscribe to this podcast. Yeah, you already listened to this podcast, so maybe you're subscribed. If not, go and do it.
Good work.
Leave us a 5-star review. It is extraordinarily helpful in helping the show get out to more people. And hey, maybe it's something nice that you can do for someone. That'd be great if you could go and do that. Nick, thank you once again for coming on.
Appreciate it.
We are done here, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Yogi Ferrell.